How many of you get alerts on your phone? Like emergency alerts, weather, news updates, stuff like that. You get those. I want you to imagine for a minute. Imagine you get an alert on your phone, and the alert tells you that we've just discovered a violent criminal has broken out of a nearby prison, and we've found out he is targeting you. He's coming after you. We've discovered journals that he has, and we've found out that he's been stalking you online. He has pictures of you, pictures of your family, pictures of your house. He knows your schedule. And in his journals, he spells out very clearly how he plans to break into your house late some night while you're asleep. And he spells out very clearly all the ways he intends to harm you and your family. Now, if you got an alert like that, what would you do? You get the dog on him, right? Like, you'd get a dog, not a dog like we have, but a big dog with teeth that's mean and bites, right? You'd probably get a weapon that shoots or stabs or both. You'd get a security system. You'd get motion detector lights. You'd be on your guard, right? Like, you would do, well, you get a guard snake, something like that. You would do whatever it takes, right? To make sure you can protect yourself, protect your family, protect what you own, wouldn't you? You would protect yourself. Here's the bad news. Everything I just told you is 100% true. You and I have an enemy who is targeting us. He knows our every move, and he has plans to come after us. And we've been given the alert about this enemy multiple times. One of those alerts is in 1 Peter chapter 5. I want you to see what he tells us in verse 8. He says, "Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." Peter tells us, he says, you need to watch out. You need to be on your guard because you and I have an enemy whose goal is to destroy us. Last week, we talked about how God created Adam and Eve and he put them in this amazing paradise, the Garden of Eden. And everything was perfect. They had everything they could ever want. It was husband and wife living together in perfect harmony, fellowship with God, the perfect relationship with each other, and everything was exactly as God intended it. But then in Genesis chapter 3, another character enters the story. The serpent arrives to tempt Adam and Eve, and he comes to destroy their fellowship with God and to destroy their oneness as husband and wife. And it's really important for us to understand that that same enemy is just as active today as he was on that day. And just as he targeted Adam and Eve to destroy their relationship with God and with each other, he targets us to destroy our walk with God and our marriages as well. In fact, Paul warns us also, and he puts it in these words. He says in Ephesians 6:11, "Put on all of God's armor so that you will be able to stand firm against all strategies of the devil." So Paul tells us, he says, you need to prepare. You need to arm up. You need to get your armor on and get ready because we have an enemy who has plans against us. You may not think very much about the devil. You probably don't spend a lot of time thinking about the devil, but I can promise you he spent a lot of time thinking about you. Yesterday. He's invested a lot of thought into how to attack you, how to destroy you, how to intrude on your marriage, on your family, on your relationships, how to mess up your walk with God, how to ruin your life. He's put a lot of thought into that. In fact, Paul says he has strategies against us, strategies designed against you and against me. Peter says he's like a lion walking around looking for opportunities, looking for weaknesses where he can step in and attack us. Here's what that means. He's looking for vulnerabilities in your life. He's looking for those weak spots that I have, those weak spots that you have, where he can get in and attack and undermine, and that includes in our marriages. Where are the weak spots where he can get in and mess up that relationship? Because he wants to divide and he wants to destroy. And Paul goes on to, in the next verse, to say that we're not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world. He says, we're fighting against mighty powers and evil spirits. You and I need to know something. Your marriage is under attack, and your spouse is not the enemy. Now, that's easy for us to forget when we're in the middle of an argument, right? Why are they so unreasonable? Why won't he ever listen? Why does she have to be so emotional? Why? They do this all the time. And we get into this back and forth, and so often we can hold the other person as they're the cause of our problems, they're the cause of everything that's going wrong in my life right now, and we see them as the enemy. When the truth is, you and I are in a battle against spiritual forces of the unseen world who despise God, they hate you, they hate your spouse, and they want to destroy what God brought together in your marriage. And many times we don't even see it because his attacks tend to be very subtle. It's not like Satan shows up at the front door, you know, with the red outfit and the horns and the pitchfork and knocks on the door and says, "Hi, my name's Satan. I'm here to destroy your life. Can I come in?" That doesn't happen. He's sneaky. He's a liar. He's deceitful. And his attacks, his ways of intruding in our lives tend to be those little things, those small things that we don't pay attention to until they continue to pile up and take on a life of their own. And then all of a sudden we realize there's a major issue here that I need to address. There's an interesting verse in the Song of Solomon. Actually, that's not true. There's a lot of interesting verses in that book. For those of you who don't know, the Song of Solomon is a book in the Old Testament that is devoted entirely to the joys of sexual intimacy between a husband and wife. That's what that entire book is all about. So God has a lot to say about that. We're going to be talking about that soon. And so much so that he gives an entire book to talking only about that. So now most of you, you're going to go home this afternoon. You're going to pick up your Bible and start reading it again, aren't you? You're welcome. So we're just going to look at one verse from that book because there's a warning in there that we need to pay attention to. It's in Song of Solomon chapter 2, verse 15. Here's what it says. "Catch all the foxes, those little foxes, before they ruin the vineyard of love, for the grapevines are blossoming." He says, catch all the foxes before they ruin the vineyard of love. Now, obviously, this is a metaphor, right? It's not like there's an actual vineyard where love grows on the vines, right? He's talking about a metaphor for the relationship. And he says, you need to be aware of these little foxes that can come in and destroy the relationship, destroy that vineyard. So what's this all about? Well, if you had a vineyard, you had to protect it against foxes. Now, in the animal kingdom, foxes aren't really that intimidating, right? Like, we're not afraid of them. They're not big and scary like lions or bears, those kind of things. They don't come after people. They're just kind of skittish. Like, if they see you, they're going to run the other way. So we're not afraid of them. And so you could kind of overlook them and say they're not that big of a deal. But if you owned a vineyard, what would happen is foxes would come in and they would eat the blossoms on your vines before they had a chance to fully bloom and become grapes. And so the result is they completely destroy your crop and you have no grapes and all of the work you put into it ends up being nothing. So he says, pay attention to them before that happens. What's he saying? He's saying you've got to watch out for the little things that can interfere in your relationship. Those little things that might seem harmless in your marriage, that if you don't pay attention to them, they're going to build, they're going to grow, they're going to pile up, and they're going to cause major, major problems in your marriage. So it could be things like small compromises, thought patterns that we allow to continue in our minds. It could be other relationships that become borderline inappropriate. It could be priorities that have become more important to us than our spouse, and we push our spouse aside for other things. It could be behaviors and habits that tend to violate trust in those relationships. It could be careless words that bring harm to our spouse. It's important, he says, for us to know that we're not allowing those little things to come in, to intrude, and to eat away at what could be an amazing relationship. Because the truth is, most marriages that end, or most marriages that are unhappy, that didn't happen overnight. Usually it happened because of a series of smaller things that piled up and built up over time. Small compromises that over time were not paid attention to, they were ignored, but they kept happening, and now all of a sudden it's a major issue that seems like it's an insurmountable problem. One example we're going to talk about for a few minutes is sexual temptation. Because sexual sin, when we're married and before we're married, doesn't begin with the physical act. It begins with small compromises. It begins with one little step, and then we take the next little step, and then the next little step, and we make excuses all along the way and say things like, it's not that big of a thing, it's no big deal. Nobody's getting hurt. Everything's fine. And then eventually we continue following that path and we end up crossing a line we cannot uncross. Remember Jesus said in Matthew 5 that adultery does not begin with the act of adultery. It begins long before that. It begins in the mind. It begins with a thought. It begins with a look. It begins with embracing a temptation and allowing it to play out in our minds. And it becomes incredibly destructive. And that's absolutely true. Do you realize that 60% of divorces in our country right now say that pornography was a major factor in that divorce? Because what happened was somebody began looking at pictures online and saying, well, it's just a picture. It's not that big of a thing. Or they started watching videos. Oh, it's just video. It's okay to look as long as I don't touch. It's not that big of a thing. And compromises were made and lines were crossed and trust was violated and the marriage fell apart. And it's because of that tendency we have to overlook the small things that can blossom into bigger things and end up causing major problems. It's because of that tendency that we have that Paul gives us a really important warning in Ephesians chapter 5. Look at what he says in Ephesians 5 verse 3. He says, among you, there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Paul tells us here that sexual immorality should have no place in the life of a follower of Christ. He says, not even a hint. Don't even open the door, even just a little bit, to temptation. Not even a hint. Now, think about it. That standard, not even a hint of sexual immorality, that's a much higher standard if you're single than just saying, wait until you're married. Don't go all the way. That's a higher standard than that. It's a much higher standard if you're married than just saying, don't cheat on your spouse, don't sleep around. It's a higher standard than that. Not even a hint means instead of asking the question, how far can I go before I really hurt someone? How far can I go without having regret and shame in my life? How close can I get to the line without crossing it? Not even a hint means I don't ask those questions. I ask instead, what steps can I take to make sure I don't come anywhere close to crossing that line? It means I ask the question, what are the things I can do? What are the guards I can build up in my life to make sure as a single person I stay sexually pure and as a married person I am absolutely faithful to my spouse? Paul says, not even a hint, because even a hint leads to much bigger things. Solomon talks about the same thing in Proverbs chapter 4. He puts it this way in verses 14 and 15. He says, do not set foot on the path of the wicked, or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. He says the same thing like six different ways here. He says, don't set foot on the path of the wicked. What is the wicked? When Solomon talks about the wicked in the book of Proverbs, he's talking about people who disregard what God says. I know God says this, but I'd rather do that. Even though he said not to, it makes me happy. It makes me feel good. So I know God said not to, but I'm going to anyways. Solomon says, don't even set foot on that path. Don't even touch your toe on that path. And he says it six different ways. He says, avoid it. Don't travel on it. Don't walk in that way. Turn away from it and walk away from it. In other words, if we want to follow God and if we want to honor our spouse, or our future spouse if we're single, what that means is we've got to distance ourselves from anything that would open the door to temptation. We've got to choose to distance ourselves from anything that would in any way open the door to, remember, Peter says there's an enemy and he's prowling around like a lion, looking for an opening, looking for an opportunity where he can step in, mess up your walk with Christ, mess up your relationships. He's looking for that opportunity. So staying off of that path means I'm not going to open the door even a little bit, because I know if I do, he's going to come in and he's going to cause harm. And so for men, since we're attracted by sight, true or false, not even a hint should influence what we look at, what we watch, and where we go on the internet, shouldn't it? Not even a hint. So, guys, if you're struggling with this, if you find yourself looking at things on your phone you shouldn't look at, my best advice to you is get rid of the smartphone and get a flip phone. and give your wife the unlock code so you can't hide anything from her. If your struggle has to do with looking at stuff on the computer, then get rid of the laptop because it gives you way too much privacy. Set up a desktop computer somewhere in the middle of the house where everybody can see the screen and you know you have no privacy, so you're not even tempted to go there. Get some blocking software like Covenant Eyes or something like that. Get an accountability partner, someone who's not going to judge you and attack you when you mess up, but they'll hold you accountable and ask you the difficult questions. What are we talking about? Doing whatever it takes to shut that door. Whatever it takes to make sure we don't even set foot on that path, whatever it takes to make sure we don't give ourselves over to even a hint of sexual immorality. For both men and women, it means, not even a hint, means avoiding anything that could possibly lead to an affair. Most affairs don't just happen. Usually they happen as a result of a series of decisions, a series of choices that are made. It begins with small compromises, like maybe flirting with that coworker and saying something like, you know, they're giving me attention that I'm not getting from my spouse anymore. So it's okay. It's just, we're just joking around. It's just harmless fun. We're not doing anything. And then you find yourself paying special attention to how you dress and spending more time getting ready for the day because you want to make sure you really look attractive in case you see that person. Or you find yourself having borderline inappropriate conversations with them. You're sharing things with them that you no longer share with your spouse. And the mentality becomes, well, I can't really open up and be honest with my spouse anymore. But this person, they get me. I can really open up to them and be vulnerable with them. Listen to what Paul says, not even a hint. And what that means is this: if you're married and there's a person outside of your marriage that you're developing feelings for, and you're beginning to have an attraction towards, not even a hint means we're going to make sure that I am never alone with that person because I'm not going to put myself in a situation where temptation could become overwhelming. It means I'm going to stop having those open, intimate, vulnerable conversations with them. I'm not going to text them anymore. I'm not going to go out of my way to try to see them at work or to make sure I'm seen by them at work. In other words, we're going to distance ourselves from anything that could open the door to temptation, that could open the door to this intruder to come in and mess up the marriage and mess up my walk with Christ. Now, you might be sitting there and thinking, this sounds really extreme. Like you're taking this way too far. I just want to remind you of a couple of things. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says something that was shocking to his listeners and is shocking to you probably the first time you saw it. He says, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. Now, that's pretty gross, and all of us have both hands and both eyes, so I'm guessing nobody has taken that literally. And I don't think he intended us to. The point is this: whatever it is that opens up the door to temptation, walk away from it. Do whatever it takes to distance yourself from that temptation, from that thing that could lead you away from God and that could mess up your marriage. Walk away from it. Take extreme measures if that's what you have to do to protect yourself and protect your marriage. Think about this. Ask yourself this question. If this seems extreme, ask yourself this question. Why should I fight a temptation in the future if I have the power to eliminate it right now today before it ever happens? Why should I choose to leave the door open to the enemy, knowing he's going to walk through that door, mess up my life, mess up my walk with Christ, mess up my marriage, my relationship? Why should I choose to leave that door open when right here and now I could slam it shut, deadbolt it, close it, and keep the temptation from even happening to begin with? See, the devil is happy if he can get us to make even small compromises, because those small compromises lead to bigger compromises. So it's important for us to ask, what are those areas in my life? If the enemy is like a lion looking for weaknesses, what is he seeing in my life that's a weakness where he could get in and attack me and attack my family? What are those compromises I've made? What are those areas in my life where I've opened the door even just a little and I made excuses and said, it's no big deal. It's okay. It's not that big of a thing. I haven't crossed a line. What are those areas? And whatever they are, I am urging you today, slam that door shut, deadbolt it, put the chain across, stick a chair under the doorknob, do whatever you need to do to prevent him from having access to your heart, access to your home, to your family, to your marriage. because you and I are in a battle. Your marriage is under attack, and your spouse is not the enemy. Now, with that in mind, there's a few things I need to say to the ladies and then to the men. So first of all, ladies, I want to share a secret with you. I'm letting you in on something that guys know and you may not know. So men, I apologize. And ladies, let's just keep this in here. Don't tell anybody, okay? Here's the secret. Here's what you need to know. As men, we're intimidated by you. It's true. We're intimidated by you. It all started back in fifth grade, sixth grade, when we first noticed something different. Come back to school after summer break, and we saw her, and we were like, oh, wow, she looks different than she did a few months ago. And all of a sudden, something inside of me feels different about her than I did a few months ago. And everything changed at that moment, and we felt nervous all of a sudden. We felt anxious. We didn't know what to say. And from that moment forward, everything changed. And from that moment forward, we so desperately wanted to impress you. We wanted you to see us as powerful, as funny, as intelligent, as attractive, as competent. We wanted to impress you from that moment forward. Now, here's what that means. Because we want to impress you, you have the ability, ladies, to completely destroy our confidence. You have more power over us than you even can begin to realize. And what that means, wives, is this. If your husband is struggling right now, if your marriage is struggling right now, what he needs from you more than anything, he needs to hear words of encouragement and words of affirmation from you. What is not helpful is focusing exclusively on everything that upsets you. Is focusing exclusively on all the ways that you feel he's failed, all the things he's done wrong, all the ways that you're not happy with him, all the ways he's disappointed you. That is not as helpful as building him up. Find something positive, something he's doing right, and make a big deal out of it. Shine a spotlight on it, talk about it, thank him for it, notice it, appreciate it. I'm telling you right now, that is powerful. One of the greatest gifts I receive from my amazing wife so consistently is this. She tells me four magical words, and she says them often. Those words are as follows. I believe in you. I can't begin to tell you how powerful that is for me. I can't begin to tell you how deeply that connects me to her. Especially in those times when I don't believe in myself. In those times when I've tried something and failed. When my best wasn't good enough. I invested a lot of time, a lot of energy in something, and I thought, this is going to be awesome, this is going to be great, and then it just totally falls flat, and I lose confidence, and I lose the ability to believe in myself, and she steps in and says, I believe in you. I can't tell you how that motivates me. And that is far more motivating for me than if she were to point out all of my flaws, all of my failures, all the things I'm doing wrong, all the ways I've disappointed her. If that was her focus, I would only feel defeated. Ladies, your husband needs to hear words of encouragement and affirmation, and he needs to hear them from you. Because every man struggles with a question. And the question is, am I enough? Do I have what it takes? And ladies, if you are constantly criticizing him, pointing out his faults, pointing out his flaws, pointing out his failures, and not encouraging him and building him up, then the message very clearly is, no, you don't have what it takes. And what happens is most men, instead of that motivating them to change, instead of motivating them to work on what needs to be worked on, instead, it communicates this to them. I am not competent in the relationship. No matter what I try, it's not good enough. So I'm going to stop focusing over here. I'm going to pull away from the relationship and focus my energy over here and over here where I know what I'm doing and I receive affirmation. I hope this is making sense. I'm not saying never talk about the difficult things. That's important. But I'm saying things need to be balanced. Ladies, your husband needs to hear words of affirmation and encouragement, and he needs to hear them from you. men. As men, it's really important that we understand we need to engage in the relationship. I think our failure far too often is the same as Adam's failure. We go passive. When the serpent came and began to tempt Eve, Adam was right there the whole time. He saw everything, he heard everything, and he did nothing. Men, it's important for us to know our wives are fighting a battle. And far too often, they feel as though they have to fight that battle completely alone. And that is not okay. They need us to fight for them. They need us to be a source of strength for them. They need to know that the battles they're in matter to us, that the wounds they have sustained and continue to feel matter to us. And men, it's important for us to know this. We can do this. We're wired to be fighters. We're wired to be protectors. Think about it. If someone breaks into my house, wants to harm my wife and my daughter, here's what's not going to happen. I'm not going to say to Sheila, hey, you go take care of that while I hide in fear under the bed, right? No man in here would do that. What's going to happen? I've got my firearms, several of them. They're loaded and ready to go. And if they're out of reach, whatever I can get my hands on is going to become a weapon. Because if somebody intrudes, if somebody comes after our spouse, our family, what matters to us, we're going to fight and we're going to defend. We are wired and built to do that. Men, you need to know, I need you to hear this, your wife is under attack. There's an intruder in your marriage. There's an intruder in your home. There's a serpent who is tempting her, who is lying to her, trying to make her feel worthless, trying to question her value, trying to overwhelm her. You need to be there for her and you need to fight for her. That's what God has called us to do. Because just as every man has a question, do I have what it takes? Every woman has a question. Am I worth pursuing? Do I matter enough to someone that they will fight for me when I'm under attack? And guys, our passivity, when we disconnect from the relationship, when we pull back emotionally from our wives, what that does is it communicates to our wives, no, you're not worth fighting for. You're not valuable enough for me to invest time in this relationship. Men, our wives need us to step up and to fight for them. So husbands and wives, your marriage is under attack. And your spouse is not the enemy. There's an intruder in your home. Peter warned us about it long ago. He said, your enemy is like a lion walking around. He's watching you. He's looking for an opening. He's looking for a weakness where he can attack. He wants to destroy your marriage. He wants to fill your home with anger, with indifference, with unforgiveness, with self-centeredness, with separation. If we're going to defeat this enemy, as husbands and wives, we've got to stop fighting against each other and join together and fight against our common enemy. So after Peter gives us this warning in verse 8, he says, your enemy is like a lion prowling around looking for an opportunity to attack you. He then gives a command, and I want to close with this. In verse 9, look what he says. Take a decisive stand against him and resist his every attack with strong, vigorous faith. Our enemy, he's powerful and he's sneaky. But if you're in Christ, you are more than a conqueror. If you walk in submission to God, if you walk in obedience to the Holy Spirit, and if you take up the armor God has made available, the enemy cannot lay a finger on you. Victory is available to us, but we have to choose it. And the way we choose it is by fighting against our enemy and fighting together against our enemy.